Blog Talk Radio.
We are the Borg. Lower your shield and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Hey, welcome to Trek Talk, and this is Jim, and Dan will be with us shortly, and tonight will be our first of many two-hour shows. We were finally able to upgrade our show thanks to the great support of all you wonderful Star Trek fans. I've said it all along, you guys are the best, and you never let me down. So congratulations to you guys, and congratulations to us. We have a lot of plans for the new show, and we have a lot of new topics and issues that we're going to talk about, and some different segments that we're going to do on the show. We're going to try to give away an OP ship on every show. It's going to be that simple. We want to give back to you guys, so all you have to do is give us a call, and we're going to give you a ship. So if you're listening, just pay attention for when we ask for it, and then you can give us a call, and you'll win. It's that simple. It's that quick. It's our way of saying thank you to you guys, the fans. We broke 2,500 fans on our Facebook page this week, thanks to you guys. And we're also going to be doing a lighted Borg cube raffle. One of the awesome fans on our Facebook page was gracious enough to get in touch with us about him getting one of his ships on our raffle. Dan and I agreed to do that for him. So we're going to have a U.S.-only Borg lighted Borg cube raffle this week. And for you non-U.S. residents, as we had promised you, we're going to have a Chitang raffle for non-U.S. residents only. So we're going to have two raffles this week, one for a lighted Borg cube for U.S. citizens and the Chitang for anyone outside of the U.S. because you guys are so awesome. So bear that in mind when you're making your plans. And I noticed that Dan is with us. Dan, how you doing tonight?
I'm better now. My computer flaked out on me, but I got it fixed.
Well, that's okay because I called the show to log on, and then my phone dropped out just as the show started, so I had to call back in and re-log in and so on. So we're on equal terms tonight. So I was just telling everybody about the show, how we're going to expand it. We have a lot of topics that we're going to touch on, and we're not rushed anymore, so now we can take our time. And we can fully explore these different topics that come up. We're going to continue to do Star Trek Attack Wing because that's been very successful for us. But we're not going to limit ourselves only to Attack Wing either. We're going to be talking about science fiction movies, Star Trek episodes, whatever comes up. I do know we're planning on doing a full show on each one of the 12 Star Trek movies, and we'll probably do at least one show on each one of the Star Trek series. So that should keep us going for a while. And, of course, whatever else Dan and I decide we want to throw in there, Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, Space 1999, whatever. I mean, this is your show, so we're going to try to program the show around what you guys want. So we'll have things on Facebook page, and we'll give you guys the option to pick what we're going to talk about or not talk about. So keep an eye on the Facebook page for updates. So that's awesome. So I see Matthew Dobson has joined us in the chat room. Hey, how you doing, Matt? Thanks for joining us. I do have the winner. I want to get this out of the way before we get going here. The winner of the grab bag raffle for this week, and the grab bag raffle means that the name I'm about to name, the winner, gets to pick the OP kit that he wants out of the ones that we have. So you don't have to take the Chitang, you don't have to take the Raven, you can take whichever ship you want. So that worked out very well for us, so I think we're going to continue to do the grab bag until we run out of stuff. And the big winner of the grab bag raffle is, drum roll please, Dan. That's an awesome drum roll. The winner is Robert Bruce. That's right, Robert Bruce. Congratulations, you're the winner of our grab bag raffle. If you would just shoot me your address on our Facebook page and let me know which OP kit you're interested in, and we'll get that right out to you. Once again, congratulations to Robert Bruce.
Congratulations,
so now that we have that out of the way, since our show was limited to only a half an hour, when I was doing the Masters of Disaster with Ken, we had a full 2 hours. So if there's anybody listening that listened to that show previously, you already know who I am. But we've had a lot of growth, a lot of new fans, so I'm going to bore you with my background bio again. But we have Dan with us now, and nobody knows Dan like Dan knows Dan. So what we're going to do what we're going to do for right now is we're going to introduce ourselves to you guys. We're no different than you guys. Dan does not work for WizKids, nor do I, nor did Ken. None of us have any affiliation with WizKids in any way, shape, or form. We're just fans just like you guys. And when I started up the Facebook page, living way up here in the sticks of Vermont, we don't have any OP events anywhere near me. I have to go 2 hours up north to get to Burlington or 2 hours south to get to Albany to get to an OP event. So I don't get to many. I've been to one. And that kind of torqued me because I wanted the Chitang. So I had to drive all the way to Albany to enter an OP event to win it. And I decided, well, what if we could get this stuff out to all the fans that don't have an OP event nearby them, don't have an awesome gaming store nearby them, which I don't have in Rutland. I have to buy everything off of eBay or the Internet. So that was the idea that sprung the Facebook page and the show. So that's why we're doing the show. As far as me, I've been accused of a lot of things, most recently not being a real Star Trek fan, because I don't despise the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. This is another topic for a whole other show. But just let me tell you guys a little bit about why I'm a Star Trek fan and who I am a little bit, and then we'll give Dan the soapbox, and he can tell you about his experiences. I've been a Star Trek fan. I've been watching Star Trek since 1979. Living up here in Vermont, we didn't have any Star Trek, so when I went to visit my parents down in Brooklyn, New York, I would watch Channel 11's Chiller Theater at midnight. I would sneak downstairs, I would turn on the TV, and I would watch Star Trek. And it just captured my imagination right off the bat. The first episode that I ever saw was Return of the Archons. Not one of the best, but it pulled me in. And then I saw Spectre of the Gun, not another one of the best, but it was enough to keep me hooked. And I've been watching Star Trek ever since then. I did grow up as a Star Wars fan, I have to admit, because when I was a teenager, Star Wars was the craze. So I skipped Star Trek the Motion Picture in the movie theater in favor of Star Wars. And so there you have it. But over the course of the years, I drifted back to Star Trek. Star Trek was always there. I have organized and promoted several Star Trek fan clubs over the course of my life. The International Federation of Trekkers, the Klingon Defense Force, just to name a few. And I have attended hundreds of Star Trek conventions. So many that I couldn't even begin to count them all. I've met every single Star Trek actor on every single show. I don't know them personally. I don't hang out at their houses, but I've met them. I can tell you who was an a-hole and who wasn't, and who I liked and who I didn't, and stories about them. So I've done that. And back in 1990, I got together with my Star Trek club at the time, which was a Northeast Star Trek Association, NESTA. And we decided that we're going to do our own Star Trek convention. We're going to run a fan convention in upstate New York for Star Trek fans, a convention for the fans, by the fans, the way the fans want to see it. So I went about organizing KlingCon 91. We had Mark Leonard and Marina Sirtis. And just by a total stroke of luck, people like to say it was my great planning. Hey, I'll take that compliment, but it was just a total stroke of luck. We picked the weekend, and it happened to be September 17th and 18th and 19th, which coincidentally happened to be the premiere date of Star Trek. I did not know this at the time, but it was. We were working with Fox 23 in Albany, New York, and they gave us a copy of the Star Trek VI movie trailer before anybody else got to see it. And we also got a copy of The Best of Both Worlds Part 2, which we showed at midnight at the convention before it aired on television. Back in 1990, things weren't like they are today. No internet. We didn't have all these cell phones. You know, we printed a newsletter that was hand-printed on a computer. I think we did have Kinko's. I mean, we did go to Kinko's to copy it, but it was all done by hand. So this was a huge convention. We had so many people come that we had to turn them away, which was a disappointment. And then we did another one and another one, and we stopped at number 4. So that's my quick Star Trek history. Well, yeah, that's my quick, brief Star Trek history. So if anybody thinks that I'm not a Star Trek fan, I beg you to call up and tell me why you think you're a better Star Trek fan or you're not a Star Trek fan than I am, and we'll discuss it. So that's my brief story, and I will let Dan share his story with you. Take it away, Dan.
Well, mine is nowhere near as colorful as yours.
That's okay. We love you anyways.
Well, somebody has to. I am not as, let's say, aged as you, so my introduction to Star Trek was probably, earliest I can remember is going to see the Star Trek, the first Star Trek movie. I was all of 4, I think, but I had watched enough Star Trek, even at 4 years old, my father thought it would be not a waste of money to take his 4-year-old to see Star Trek, the motion picture. Of course, then I was barely 11 or 12 when Next Generation came on TV. And it's one of the few things my father and I have shared together, which is Star Trek. So we kind of enjoyed that the whole time. He didn't pick up where Deep Space Nine left off. And unfortunately, Deep Space Nine and Voyager, I wasn't able to watch on first run. I was off removing bad guys from the world in the Middle East by then. I did pick up on I was there for Enterprise's premiere, but I only got the first 2 seasons, first season and a half under my belt, and then I had to go back and remove bad guys from the world in the Middle East again. Luckily, Netflix has redeemed me as a Star Trek fan because that's where I've caught up a lot of it. Now, I've gone through all the series. I've gone through all the movies. I've back-to-back most of the series because of Netflix's ability to binge-watch things. I have always been a Star Trek fan. I prefer Star Trek over Star Wars, hands down. I believe Star Trek is a possible future where Star Wars is just Dungeons and Dragons in space. And I know we've had that discussion before. I have never been to a convention, not without trying. It's just up to recently, my career of choice has not allowed me to be inside the United States during most conventions. I do, however, feel bad that I just had Wizard World or Wizard Con or whatever it was down here about 45 minutes from me. The picture we posted up of LeVar Burton and most of the Next Generation crew was taken at Wizard World, and I missed it last weekend. Something about having to go hang out with family members.
A good friend of mine, who we had our last show that I did with Ken, Mark B. Lee, he is the co-host of WizardCon. And I would love, I haven't seen him in about 20 years since my daughter was born. Oddly enough, my wife and I were going to conventions all up and down the East Coast, and then my daughter came along, and I had to become a father, and I had to stop doing the things I enjoyed because I had to do the father thing, which was awesome. I have no complaints about that. But my stuff went on the back burner, and I kind of drifted away from a lot of the people I knew in the Star Trek world. I've recently reconnected with Mark, and he does the Wizard World conventions, and I would love to do nothing more than to take my wife and my daughter to Chicago to the convention and hook up with Mark again. So that's something that we might want to consider doing.
This year, I had to do a wedding. I didn't have much choice. The wife said, "You shall," and I said, "Yes, ma'am." Next year, if you want to do it, we're going to do it. I have no problem with that. I will set the time aside. I don't have anything better to do during that time frame. As a teacher, I sit home a lot.
Well, the good thing about knowing the co-host is I'm sure we can get some interviews, we can talk to some of the stars and things, and we can have some nice stuff to share with our fans on the next radio show.
That would be awesome. The geek in me would just explode with happiness, let alone what we get to share with the show. I mean, I wouldn't even know what to do with myself. I'm almost tearing just thinking about it.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know how many conventions we've attended. I couldn't tell you. But if you've never been to a convention, back when we did ours, back in the 90s, they were strictly Star Trek conventions. And basically, I'm going to give you guys a flashback here, because some of you might not know. But back in the early days of Star Trek conventions, they were a Star Trek convention. We would show Star Trek blooper reels. We would show Star Trek episodes because, remember, VHS and Beta were just on the cutting edge of technology, and they were battling it out at the time. So if you had Star Trek episodes on video, you could show them in a video room, and people couldn't get them on Netflix, so it was a big drawing event. You know, you'd have 20 or 30 people sitting around in a room watching Balance of Terror, all clapping their hands and having a good time together and enjoying Star Trek at the same time. And it was that camaraderie, that family feeling, which really made me want to continue to do the Star Trek conventions. You'd have a big dealer's room that sold T-shirts and model kits and all kinds of Star Trek memorabilia. And then, of course, the highlight of the show is the guest speaker, like Mark Leonard or Marina Sirtis, would come out on stage for an hour and chat with the fans, answer questions, and then sign autographs for everybody. And then we used to have a costume contest and a dance party at night, and then the convention would officially be over, but it would continue well into the night with parties and fans' rooms. And that's pretty much what happened at a Star Trek convention. They've changed since the 90s. Now they no longer have strict Star Trek conventions because Star Trek isn't on television anymore. And unless they have guests from other genres, Star Trek guests alone don't draw like they used to. Sad, but true. So now what you do at a convention, if you go to one, is they'll have a big ballroom with tables along the walls, and they'll have, like, the Bionic Man over here, Hulk Hogan over there, you know, every kind of different genre you could think of. Dirk Benedict from Battlestar Galactica, so on and so forth. And you go up to their table, you pay them their fee. Most of them are around $30. You lay down your $30, and they sign your picture. If you want to get a picture with the person, you got to plunk down another $30, and they'll stand up and put their arm around you for a picture. And then you might get a chance to talk to them for a couple minutes, ask them a few questions, and then the next person in line comes up, and you move on to the next table. So they're a lot different than they used to be, but the fans are still as fervent as ever and as fanny as ever, and that's pretty much what I like to go for. I like to go for the cosplay, all the costumes, talking to the fans, that type of thing. So that's pretty much what you will see at a convention these days. But I hear Mark tells me that the Wizard World cons aren't like that, so I want to put him to the test and call him on the carpet and find that out for myself.
Yeah, I would have loved to go. In fact, I tried to sneak in going on Friday evening. It was last Friday. It was literally last weekend. I wanted to try to go on Friday, but there was also Star Trek Attack Wing tournament, plus she had family coming in. And so I got roped into not going and doing something less, what's the word I'm looking for, expensive. How about that? So that's what I did instead. But then, of course, we saw the picture of all the Star Trek Next Generation people and William Shatner in that picture. And it said, or I found that it says it came right out of that Chicago Wizard WizardCon, and I kind of cried a little bit. I mean, it's like meeting everything you idolized when you were 11 or 12 years old, and having it 45 minutes away, because that's little. I mean, that's how far it is from here. If we hopped into a car and drove here to there, it's 45 minutes, and that's with bad traffic. And to miss out, it's kind of a little bit agitating.
Well, you'll catch another one. I'm sure they have more in Chicago than they have here in Rutland, Vermont. So
yeah,
they have a
Chicago
Comic-Con or something.
It was huge. I mean, I know it was huge. Just the reports and stuff that came out, our local news, which, of course, it's Chicago local news, which isn't really – I mean, Chicago's a big city, so yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. It was packed. So I guarantee there will be another one next year. This is not the first one and won't be the last. Just
As time goes on,
some of these actors, some of these people we idolized, I mean, they're starting to get to an age where I get concerned they may not be around next year. I mean, William Shatner's in his 80s. Patrick Stewart's in his 70s. I mean, it's not that they're in bad health, but when you start getting to those ages, you start wondering when's your... You know, your idols start becoming mortal at that point.
Well, we really need another Star Trek TV series. It's been long enough. I really think we need one, a TV series again. Whether it be a Klingon series like the Captain Worf one that's been floating around for years, or whether they do something different, we need a Star Trek series on television. And the reason why I say that is that, unlike Star Wars is a pure fantasy. It's just escapism. I'll pop in a Star Wars movie and I'll just sit there and I'll have my little pretend lightsaber and do my Yoda sounds and my Darth Vader breathing and just slip into just kid mode and just have a good time, relax, and, you know, escape for a little while. Star Trek is a little bit different because Star Trek gives us a vision, a possible vision of a future. And back in the 60s when it originally aired, you know, we had a black woman on the bridge of a starship. We had a Russian on the bridge of a starship. We had an alien. We had a Scotsman. We had the whole, you know, Earth on the Enterprise. And at that time, that was something unheard of. They were groundbreaking. They had a lot of stories that dealt with issues that were real that they allowed to sneak through because they were ridiculous science fiction. And I think that a show that can do that with today's issues for today's youth, I think, is something that we really need. So I really, really would like to see them produce. And now, Axanar looks like it's going to be good, but that's just going to be a movie. And
well, yeah, but
we,
did you see my futures link?
And yeah, I was about to bring that up. I hadn't heard anything about that until I read that link that you posted. That surprised me. And we have one more Star Trek movie coming out. They signed a 3-movie deal, so Into Darkness was movie number 2. We will see one more Star Trek movie. And it will correspond with the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So that we have to look forward to. But beyond that, whether or not they sign all of those actors to another 3-movie deal or whether some of them walk away or not, nobody knows. Hopefully they'll continue to make more movies because the more Star Trek movies that are put out there, whether you like JJ or not, the more Star Trek movies that we can see and the more money that the studios can make on Star Trek, the better chance that we have of seeing a new Star Trek on television. I mean, any Star Trek is better than no Star Trek, in my mind.
I agree.
So we have one more movie that will be coming out, and after that, Star Trek's future is up in the air. And, you know, I don't want to see that die.
It was what, 4 years from the end of Enterprise to the JJ movie. So basically,
yep,
it was probably about 2.5 years before they cut the deal. Because you figure the whole previous year was pre-production and stuff like that. So, yeah, we got another movie coming, you know, give or take your, you know, point of view on the movie. Some people like it, some people enjoy it, some people tolerate it. Yeah, we need a new series. Now, the catch is I don't know if we'll see it on television. I mean, ultimately, television the way we know it, or the way we've grown up with, me and you have grown up with it, is becoming a bit antiquated. I mean, we see some of the larger series that are winning major awards, you know, what we consider major awards, Emmys and stuff like that, for those of you in the States that we know we're talking about. Overseas, basically, it's just awards to television production, not movies, television production. A lot of the Emmys coming out are pay channels, number one, or internet-released movie or TV shows based on Netflix. So could we see our next Star Trek not on normal production TV? I think that's a high possibility, like we stated before.
Take a look at, you're just talking, Game of Thrones is one of the biggest shows right now. That's on HBO. That's a pay station. That's not on television. Orange is the New Black, which won several Emmys and awards, is also not on television. That's on Netflix. Started the second season. Working in a jail myself, I got my wife and my daughter addicted to that show so that I can say, look, this is what happens in a jail. It's a great show. That's not on television. The new show that's coming out, Daredevil, that's going to be a Netflix-only series.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple others that are coming out that are only on Netflix. I watch Hemlock Grove. That's a Netflix original.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go by way of the network anymore.
No.
And that opens it up a lot. But, you know, you still have to get through Paramount holding the licensing and the whole nine yards with that. And how that would work, I don't know.
Well, let's hope
it happens.
Look at Daredevil. Daredevil is not original property by Netflix. It was a DC. Daredevil's DC? Or is it Marvel?
Yes.
Marvel.
Yep, DC. Marvel.
It's a Marvel.
No, you're
okay.
Right. It's DC with Marvel, yes.
Yeah, I'm not a super comic book dude, so my knowledge on that, please excuse it. But that's not original. So we know that they're coming down the pipeline to understand how to purchase rights. Paramount, as long as they make money, I don't think Paramount cares. I mean, look at Paramount. At the time, we had two television series, okay? We had Next Gen and DS9 on for a while, and then we had DS9 and Voyager on for a while. Paramount sold the rights to two different networks. I don't think they care, as long as they make their money. If they can get in a situation where, and I think we've touched this before, but because it's a two-hour show, and we'll probably pick up new listeners, we'll say it again. We're looking at Joss Whedon doing, okay, I'm going to do a series, you know, I'm doing, you know, a Marvel series, and then they're going to do a Marvel movies. So they're using a series to tie in movies. Well, JJ is looking the same thing for Star Wars. He wants to have a live-action Star Wars TV show and then do movies. So we can do backgrounds on the little people or on the small characters on TV and then bring them together for big movies. Okay? There's Paramount. Sell that
stuff. If you're interested in that, check that out. If you're interested in that, Disney is going to have a whole Star Wars world, actually.
Yep.
They're going to have all kinds of movies. They're going to have standalone movies. They're going to have a new animated series, and they're going to have new. They're trying to do a new Star Wars television series,
yep. Live action,
on different characters, type of a deal. And I don't see why. Boba Fett is going to be one of them. Yep, that's from Matthew in our chat room. I don't see why Paramount with the huge, rich history of Star Trek. And I'm gonna jump off here for a second and go back to the JJ thing for a second, because this is a topic that really touches me, and I really want to have a show and discuss it. Back when, after Star Trek IV and before Star Trek V, when Star Trek IV was as hugely successful as it was, and we were going around all these conventions. Now, remember, this was 1986 now. All the talk was that Harv Bennett had decided he was going to recast the original crew because they were too old, and that he was going to recast everybody and do what we refer to in the Trek world at the time was Star Trek 90210. He was going to have younger actors. They were going to be younger versions of Kirk and Spock and McCoy and whatnot, and they were going to be on their younger missions together. And this idea got shot down and booed and torn apart at every single Star Trek convention. People just vehemently hated it and were so against it that Harv Bennett left and William Shatner stepped in and gave us Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Ugh.
We will do a show on Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, everybody. Do not worry. We will come back to that. But they tried to do that once before. It did not work. J.J. Abrams came back and did it, and those two movies rank at the top grossing films of all Star Trek movies. So I guess it's all in the timing, and I guess the way it's presented and the way it's pulled off. So I don't see why they couldn't do that again.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it if we're going to do individual movies, but look at Star Trek the Motion Picture. Star Trek the Motion Picture wasn't a motion picture. It was supposed to be Star Trek II, the series. It was supposed to be a series. The actors that were casted in those positions were supposed to be for a television series. And because Gene Roddenberry and got his staff together and started throwing these things together to generate a series, and the series didn't follow through. So to recoup money / produce a movie to try to get this start up, he took footage from what was supposed to be the pilot and created a movie out of it. So we can all count the number of times that Star Trek was tried to generate into a series, and I guarantee it's going to be substantially more than series that actually came out. We go back to, you said Harv Bennett was trying to do it. So there's one. Star Trek Series 2. There's another. They try to regenerate it with animation. Animation, again, even though it's soft canon in most cases, was not a good cartoon. I mean, but the thing is, that was the type of cartoons that were in the 70s. It was real sketchy plot lines with a bunch of jumping around. I mean, I look at it, you know, in your six, 7, 8 years old, you're looking at cartoons and go, man, this cartoon is awesome, such as Transformers. I look at Transformers now from the 80s compared to cartoons that are produced now, and Transformers is garbage. So,
well, you know, the one redeeming, and we're going to talk, don't worry, guys, we are going to do really expand on a lot of these topics that we're bringing up in great length and detail. We're just trying to get some ideas out to you guys so you can see where we're going with the show, see what our feelings are, and you know, have an idea of what we're going to talk about so that you can decide if you want to follow us through this journey, through this Trek talking journey that we're about to embark on. So that's why we're kind of jumping all over the place and bouncing ideas off each other. Our typical show won't be like that. We'll have an actual topic and a structure, and we'll go with it. But
this is a bonus.
The animated series actually had the voices of all the original actors, mm-hmm. and had them all on the show, and was also written by a lot of the original writers for the original Star Trek as well.
DC Fontana, yep.
So, you know, that's something to bear in mind. But, you know, one of the big things I think that made Star Trek so popular is Star Wars. I mean, Gene Roddenberry, they were originally going to make Star Trek Phase 2 for television. The huge popularity of Star Wars at the time, Paramount said, wait a minute, whoa, whoa, look at all this money they're making on Star Wars. We've got to make a science fiction movie. And then one of the brilliant people there said, wait a minute, what about this Star Trek Phase 2 thing that we're working on? Why don't we just make that a movie? And hence, Star Trek the Motion Picture, Star Trek 2, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4, and the Star Trek we've come to know and love. So that it's funny how those things happen. But I also think that fans were ready for Star Trek the movies because so much time had elapsed between Star Trek the TV series and Star Trek the movies that
10 years.
They wanted it. They were ready for it. I think that one of the biggest disappointments for me was the Star Trek The Next Generation movies, because I feel that The Next Generation was one of the better, if not the best, Star Trek series they had produced. And when they started making movies, they just came off as elongated TV shows. They didn't have the scope of the original Star Trek movies. They didn't feel movie-ish to me. The only one that I really enjoyed and really thought was well done was First Contact. But Generations, Insurrection, and Nemesis, I think, are pure garbage, and we'll get into that later. And for me personally, I think the reason why is because when you're going to produce a TV show and you have Michael and Denise Okuda, who are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people, and they gave us the entire look of Star Trek, every Star Trek series that's been done, they have done. Yep. They gave us what they call Okudagrams. They gave us the world. They designed the starship bridges. They did it all. And back in the 80s when The Next Generation came out and Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise, this was just awesome. However, if you're going to go into a movie and you're no longer going to be on television, this is where J.J. Abrams, I feel, blew them all away. Because if you look at the Enterprise D on the TV series and you look at the Enterprise D in Star Trek Generations, you will see little to no difference at all. If you look at the ships, the sets, things like this, you're going to see no difference. It's just, you know, another episode. They didn't really give us anything different or anything new. When you look at J.J. Star Trek, that Enterprise bridge does not look like anything we've ever seen. In fact, none of the sets look like anything we've ever seen. And I think that may have been one of the problems I had with The Next Generation movies, is that they didn't feel like a movie. And if you're going to go see a Star Trek movie, you want a Star Trek movie, not a two-hour TV show that's just thrown together. So if we're going to have a new Star Trek, and as much as I love those people, the Okudas and Michael Westmore, who created Klingons and my favorite character, Worf, and we owe them the world, I really think that it's time for somebody new to step in and give us something new and something different. Because you look at the history of Star Trek, that's always what Star Trek has been about. When Next Generation first came out, people were like, oh, this sucks. They got a blind guy flying the ship. They got an android. They got a bratty little kid. There's a Klingon on the bridge, an old bald guy for a captain. They went on and on and on. That was different. That was new. And it flew. And then, you know, come along Deep Space Nine. Oh, my God, this is going to suck. It's on a space station. What can anything happen on a space station? They don't even have a ship. Same thing. Look at Deep Space Nine. I feel that's one of the best series. So as fans, we need to be challenged constantly. If they take the easy way out, as I feel they did with Star Trek Voyager, we'll get to that later, you end up with a show that's a bunch of flash and doesn't have any substance. So I would like to see them make a Star Trek series that challenges all of us. And
you said about you said about the parents, okay? You talk about Michael Okuda and Denise Okuda, who I've never met in person, but you look at it this way. When The Next Generation came out,
Okay, the Next Generation came out in 86. That is almost to the day, or almost to the year, 20 years from the original series, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, it's been, this is 2014, okay? We are 2 years short of being 30 years from the Next Generation's release date. Look at, okay, do you think the visual, the appearance of the bridge and the appearance and all the aesthetics of the bridge, do you think the Next Generation today holds up better than the original series did to the Next Generation?
Well,
I think it does. I think
that's
a loaded question, Dan.
Let me say this. I went to the Smithsonian Institute when they had the Star Trek exhibit there. I dragged my wife down there because my daughter wasn't born yet. It was just me and my wife. And we went down to Washington, D.C. We made that 10-hour trek down there. Jimmy Doohan was there signing programs and whatnot. And we saw the captain's chair that William Shatner sat in. And let me tell you something. They had poker chips glued to the chair that looked fabulous on television. The transporter room was flattened out tin garbage can lids when they stepped on the transporter pad. Dr. McCoy's medical scanner is a salt shaker. The Klingon belts are bubble wrap, spray painted gold.
What?
And
I mean, the cost of
these things, when I saw them on TV, was like, wow. And even today, knowing what they are, when I watch an original episode of Star Trek, and I know that in the episode of Lana Troyes that she's wearing plastic tablecloths that are cut into those designs and stapled together and spray-painted silver, even though I know this when I watch it, it doesn't take away from the belief or the enjoyability that I get from watching it, because they convince me to believe it. Now, the Next Generation is all flat touch screens that are with backlit panels with acoustograms on them, and that's all they are. And what they do is they just have the different lights that flash, and the actor, like Cole Meany when he's doing the transporter, he just slides his hand up there, and then the wizards in the special effects department make sure that the light moves up with the pattern of his hand, and that's all there is to it.
Right. But, I mean,
so it's a different generation.
Right, but do you think it holds up better?
You know, I think it does. I don't think that any of the Star Trek worlds really don't hold up well with time. I don't think.
I think the Next Generation
Space Nine,
held
Voyager,
up well.
And Next Generation were all in the same time frame, so they all look exactly the same.
Yeah,
but
I've always had a problem with that. I mean, this series, when the start of one series and the end of the other was separated by almost 15 years, I was like, okay, no. It's one thing you create a world, but you shouldn't have to lock yourself into it for 15 years.
Yeah, and Matthew Dobson in our chat room says that he thinks that TNG is more realistic and more believable with the way it uses technology. You know, I kind of liked Star Trek Enterprise. I thought that the bridge and the technology of Star Trek Enterprise, and I'm not talking about the stories, because there's a lot of problems there, a lot of issues, and we'll get to that when we talk about Enterprise, but just the aesthetics and look of the show. I thought Star Trek Enterprise looked really good. I thought Star Trek Enterprise was a stepping stone to the Next Generation. I thought they did a really good job making something different with that. One of the things that really got me and pulled me, sucked me into the Next Generation. And I was in the minority, Dan. Back when the Next Generation came out, when you were going to Star Trek conventions, the fans hated it. I went to a convention down in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to meet Patrick Stewart, and he got booed off the stage. So the love and admiration of the next generation was not always there. Oh, we got Karma Carmelian joining us in the chat room.
Oh, he's from Germany. Me and him talked
so
a little bit.
So it wasn't always there. It took a long time for them to get to that point. Fans really didn't like it much when it first aired. I was in the minority because there was a Klingon on the bridge. And that might sound stupid, but I've always liked the Klingons. And when I turned on The Next Generation and I saw Worf and I said, holy crap, there's a Klingon on the bridge of the Enterprise. Oh, my God. This show has got to be good if the mortal enemies of the Federation are on. No problem, guy. Thank you for joining us. To have a Klingon on the bridge just pulled me right in and made me a fan right from the get-go.
Yeah,
and if we're talking about a Star Trek series, and again, I want to mention something. This is what made me start watching Voyager was when they put Seven of Nine on Voyager. Yes, she was sexy eye candy.
Eye candy.
Looked damn good in that silver outfit, but that's not what made me watch Voyager. What made me watch Voyager was two things. I hated Voyager at first. I thought it was one of the most unimaginative series that Star Trek had ever come up with. However,
yeah.
I always, always liked the holographic Doctor. That character was always one that I said, you know, that is a cool-ass idea. But he wasn't a big enough character on the show to really make me watch it week in and week out, so I missed a lot of Voyager. However, when Seven of Nine came along, and the Borg were now more than just you will be assimilated, and we actually got to step inside of the Borg world, see the Borg for more than just a one-dimensional bad guy, and learn more about what they do to people when they assimilate them through Seven of Nine, that's when I got hooked on Star Trek. And that is what I was looking for, but they never gave me. Yes, it was a blatant sex thing. I'm not going to deny that. I'm talking about the character. If Star Trek wants to continue to challenge us as fans and wants to continue to produce quality shows like that, they need to give us a Klingon on the bridge. They need to give us a Borg. They need to give us something in the Star Trek world, a mortal. And they started it with Deep Space Nine. There was a Romulan officer on the Defiant for what, one episode?
No, she was around for like two or three. She's on for a few. It wasn't just one because, yeah, it was a couple, I think. Hold on. Was it a couple? Yeah, I thought it was a couple.
I got really excited about that. That really
got me excited
because I was like, wow, now we're going to really get to see the world of the Federation through the eyes of a Romulan. This is going to be great. And they killed her.
Yeah. I will be the rebuttal here. You know, you talk about Worf being on the bridge, okay? But look at it this way. Worf being on the bridge, they had to generate a new bad guy because now the Klingons are our buddies, okay? Us being the Federation, because that's why I see us as, okay? What did they give us? Because they said, oh, crap, let's see, we got to have, Klingons are friendly, so what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Oh, that's right, let's produce the Ferengi. Oh, come on, Gene. You know what? Just give me the Klingons being bad guys because the Ferengi was a joke.
Okay, let's forget about the TNG Ferengi because they were too dorky to be in space. but the Ferengi as developed with Quark on Deep Space Nine were a much more convincing. I don't want to use the word bad guy because I don't think Quark was a bad guy, but when they introduced Grand Nagus Zek and Rom and Nog and Quark and Moogie and we got
Moogie.
To see more of the Ferengi, they weren't the spacefaring, dorky dudes like they were portrayed on The Next Generation in the beginning.
Right.
Thankfully.
Well, I mean, Armin Shimerman and his little band of cohorts, Max Grodinchak and Aaron Eisenberg, Leonard Nimoy made the Vulcans, well, they, you know, Armin Shimerman made the Ferengis, and, you know, Nana Visitor made the Bajorans. I mean, each person, each race has had a quintessential person that centered, you know, they created, except for maybe, you know, the humans, of course, because they've always had so many humans that there's never been one that stands out and says, this is a human, let us put upon a pedestal and say, these are, you know, this is what we want to be. But, yeah, I mean, the Ferengi, I remember the first episode with the Ferengi, I was kind of laughing so hard, tears were rolling down my face. And I was like 11 years old, 12 years old. And when I grew up, you know, got older and turned around and now listened back at stuff saying, you know, they were going to be the great, you know, enemy of the Federation in the next generation, that was the original intention. I just want to go back and pimp slap some writers and go, why? What were you thinking?
And you know what? We will talk in great, great detail and depth on that particular topic when we do a Next Generation show, because there's reasons for that, and we'll get to them. But we're over halfway through our show. We're down to an hour to go, believe it or not. And I'm hoping that a lot of you guys are listening in and having a good time, and that you want to join us when we start expanding upon these topics. We're just trying to give you guys a feel for what we're all about. We're going to talk about Star Trek Attack Wing now. Well, we have to move on to that. Dan played in the Borg Collective OP Event 2, the Battle of Wolf 359, and Dan's going to give us a battle report and tell us what builds worked and what builds didn't, what build he ran, and how he kicked some major butt in the scenarios. I'm not putting the pressure on. But before we do that, I want to throw out the phone number for you guys, and if you guys have a half a brain, you'll know why I'm giving you the phone number again. It's listed on our Facebook page, and the phone number does not change from week to week, so put us in speed dial. Here is the phone number that you can call to talk to Dan and myself. Is everybody ready? Are you listening? 646-668-2433. That is our hotline number. Okay? I'll give it to you one more time. Pay attention. It's 646-668-2433. Okay? Let me see. Karma Chameleon is making a comment, which I'm going to get to in a minute because I want to get this next segment out of the way, Chameleon. So just keep that in mind. I'll cover that in a second. What is wrong with you, dog? One of my favorite episodes of the original Star Trek, one of the episodes that stuck in my mind back when I was watching Chiller Theater in Brooklyn, New York, back in the early 70s, was an episode called Arena. The reason why that episode stuck in my mind so much is because so many times on the original Star Trek, aliens were just people with shoe polish on them or different ears. But in this particular episode, we had a giant lizard. Now, he moved very slow, and it was ridiculous, but it stuck in my mind, and it made me want to watch the show more. And that's one of my favorite episodes. And hopefully it's yours as well, because if you wrote down the number I just gave you, and you call me right now, you will win a Gorn OP kit. Okay? You heard me. A Gorn OP kit will be yours from the Arena OP episodes. All you need to do is call that number that I gave you, 646-668-2433, and it's yours. It's that simple. And this is something that Dan and I are going to do on every show. We're going to give you guys free stuff. All you need to do is listen and call. Could it be any easier? No, it can't. So while we're waiting for our first caller here, I wanted to mention, so Karma Chameleon says, funny how the Ferengi were actually intended to be a serious threat during early TNG episodes and only became comedic relief on DS9. From what I recall, you seem to have just the opposite. You know, well, Chameleon, I don't know if I would. Dan, would you say that the Ferengi were comedic relief on Deep Space Nine?
There were episodes that to lighten the mood, especially when you started getting the Dominion War and stuff. It was always serious and death. They did have a tendency to throw them in a comedic role, even though there were the Quark was in the serious positions in serious episodes. But when they brought more than, I'd say, two of them together, it turned into a comedic episode. Look at the Magnificent Ferengi. Look at the Ferengi love songs. You know, when you brought more than two Ferengis on the show, it was a comedic episode. Little Green Men. All those were comedic.
I was going to mention that. That's one of my favorite episodes. I really like that one.
Yeah, but as long
as
they kept it below. Yeah, as long as they kept it below three Ferengis in one location, they were still in a semi-serious role. You know, Quark was a big part of the figure, you know, the inside information when it came to certain situations. You know, a couple times he was, informing against serious threats and things like that. So, yeah, as long as they kept it down to a minimum of Ferengis, they weren't a joke. But, yeah, they got kind of comedic when they started throwing five or six of them in the room.
Now, thank you for mentioning the Ferengi again, Chameleon. I wanted to mention, one of the things that really impressed me about Deep Space Nine was later on, as the series went on, we actually saw our first Ferengi Starfleet officer, and of course we all know who that was. That was Nog, played by Aaron Eisenberg. I thought he was a great character. And to see a Ferengi in a Starfleet uniform on the bridge of a starship, I thought this was the type of thing that I think Star Trek does the best, is challenges our perceptions of a comedic little, character of a race and makes us accept them as an officer during a time of war on a warship.
Yeah, babe.
I think that's one of the things that makes Star Trek what it is. And we still have that Gorn OP kit waiting for someone to call. All you need to do is call me and it's yours. It's that simple. You don't even have to answer a trivia question this week. All you have to do is call 646. Oh, we have a caller. Let's see who we got. Hello, welcome to Trek Talk. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Hey, where are you calling us from?
It's Mr. Dobson from Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
Wow, Mr. Dobson. Have I ever heard you before?
Probably about three times, I think. I haven't
Wow.
got a headset, so.
Well, excellent. Excellent. I'm glad you join us in our chat room every week so that I'm not there by myself in an empty room.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in there right now with Karma Chameleon. So you're interested in the Gorn OP kit?
I am.
Well, now you have one.
Fantastic.
It's that
simple. All
your friends. See that, guys? Matt has been a loyal listener, a loyal follower. He's been there with us through thick and thin, and he just picked up a Gorn OP kit for doing nothing more than dialing a number. Congratulations, Matt.
Thanks. I also played in an OP this past Sunday, too, OP2, so I could contribute to that conversation as well.
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to win the Gorn ship, and then we were going to have Dan talk about that. And since Matt played in the same event as you did, Dan, I will turn that over to you guys, Dan, and you can tell us about the Battle of Wolf 359, what your build was and what some of the better builds and worst builds were, and share your experience with everybody. And if Matthew, if you have any input, feel free to jump in and share your insight. So take it away, Dan.
Well, what we'll do is we'll brief it real quick for those of you who haven't participated yet. Basically what it is it's you and your opponent are on the field with a Borg cube. And you are not trying to shoot each other. What you're trying to do is do as much damage to the cube as possible. You get points for hitting the cube. If you get a critical in your roll, you get an extra point. You don't get an extra point for all the criticals in one roll, only the first one. And then, depending on how many ships you shoot with after the Borg cube shoots back, if your ship survives, you get a bonus point on that, too. So basically, it's shoot as often as you can, do as much damage as you can, survive as long as you can, and do more than the other team. Now, me, being the super genius I am, got pop surprised to go to this thing, so I just kind of rolled out with my giant box of equipment and didn't really pay attention to the scenario. So they said, bring 90 points. So I tossed two ships in. Well, lo and behold, I did not read the scenario, and you don't want to just bring two ships and a blind booster into that event. You want to bring as many dice as you can, which means bringing in low captains. Why? Because your captains don't really do anything for you against the board. You shoot before the board cube does, and you're not shooting your enemy. So I should have brought three or four ships plus the blind. And that's what a lot of the winners were using, was four ships, low captains, lots of dice, and 180-degree shooting arcs were preferred. It gives you more chance to shoot the bad guys at more angles and keep a distance, where I didn't do that so well.
Now,
yeah, it was the same
again, what ships?
Well.
What did you end up using in the event? What ships did you choose?
Well, I arbitrarily made a semi-smart decision. I used the Enterprise Refit because it has 180, and I also used the Reliant because it has 180, and I chose those because I don't use those ships very much. I like using things I don't use a lot because I'm not really big into I'm big into playing. And, I want to be good at it, but, yeah. And I came out in an okay shape because with the 180 shot, I could keep some distance and I didn't have to run towards the board cube. But most people were using Klaxons and, Dominion ships because of their 180 and just doing, jump in the range to shoot and then just go one by, you know, move one square or one range at a time and just mow it down until their ships were destroyed.
Yeah, we had the same
now,
thing
Matt,
on my
what did you
event.
What did you run in your event?
I ran a Vorcha, not a Burrell, but the other Bird of Prey, and then I ran a Katinga. And I had Worf with a flagship card in the Vorcha. I had Martok on the Cavort, and then I had a generic captain on the Katinga.
A man after my own heart, a true Klingon. Kapla. And how did you fare, Matt? Did you get well, or did you die well?
Well, I went two wins, one loss. I got beat by a guy running, I think it was two Keldons and a Galler. But I had issues with the Klingons when I would strafe, and the attack arc only let me do one run, and I eventually destroyed his ships got destroyed as I looped around because I was all out of range, but we went to time. But if I would have had another round, I would have been able to continue. So the key is try and get as many rounds in as you can if you're a Klingon.
Yeah.
Now your ships do have a rear firing arc, so you could fire a torpedo.
Yeah, but you can't run I wanted the flagship resource, the independent Klingon flagship, because it gives all of your friendly ships one extra attack die. So because of those points, Worf was running always six. So no matter if I was at range two or three or one, I was always, all of my ships have one extra attack die, except
yeah,
for Worf.
Yeah, secondary weapons were not common because most people were running flagships and groups and stuff like that. The winner at my event was Klingon, but he used the Chitang's barrage file, I believe it is, or fire full. What is it? The full firepower or something like that? Where
barrage of fire?
Barrage of fire. He was running barrage of fire with. I think he was running a Vorcha, a Chitang, or the Vorcha, the Chitang, and like two other, I think it was just standard Birds of Prey, so I think he was using unnamed, and using barrage of fire, he gives barrage of fire off, and then he'd turn around and just, you know, pick it off at slow range. I think he scored like 175 or 140, 150 points in rounds, where most of the rest of us are only clearing, even the second and third players only covering like 105, 110. So it was effective, and then the Klaxons and the Dominion ships and the Cardassian ships, they did pretty well. Usually, our second place player was using that, as they lovingly called the fishes.
Yeah, the Federation did not do particularly well this time around, in my OP.
Yeah, you would have to use the 180 shot, and because they're, I like the 180 arc. If I did it again, I'd probably bring unnamed Constitution and unnamed Reliant, and then bring in, because I can do pure. So I then I turn around and probably bring in, you know, a Klingon ship, the big ships. So, yeah, for anybody that hasn't played yet, use low generic captains to bring in all the bonus dice as you can, unless you have a bonus dice captain. Don't spend a bunch of points on captains, because evades ain't going to help you a whole bunch, and shooting or, you know, being having a high-end captain is not going to do anything for you. Low ends, lots of dice. I'd rather bring another battle cruiser or cruiser than have a level 7 or 8 captain.
Now, you know, why we have Matt on the phone and why we're talking about this, I noticed you both said that you had the flagship resource, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Now, if you were going to play the Borg, why not use the attack dice, which gives you a guaranteed hit, or maybe the counterattack dice, which would score you a point on the Borg firing at you?
Use the Borg, or, I'm sorry, sorry about using the Borg or using it against the Borg?
Yeah, because if you use the elite attack dice, you're guaranteed a hit every time. And if you use the counterattack dice, you know, you're going to roll your defense dice, and you could score a hit on the Borg attacking you.
Right, but the catch is you only can use, generally use one resource in most events, and basically, if I'm going to get smacked down by the Borg, I'm going to use something that's going to make my ships a little stiffer. I mean, yeah, you might get one extra shot, but if I bring a fleet or card in, that can affect more than one ship, okay, where in one round you can only use the elite dice once. So the flagship gives me multiple influences across multiple ships, where an elite tack dice or something like that only gives me one chance per round.
Yeah, same thing. With the using the independent Klingon flagship card, you get plus one attack on the ship that's their flagship, plus three a die for every ship that's within range two. So
yeah,
it's one guaranteed hit, or four extra dice every single round that you can throw. So
right.
the math, I took it with chance. I'd rather have the four extra dice than the one guaranteed hit every round.
Right.
Now,
yeah,
what about fighters? Did anybody run fighters?
Not at ours, just because they're so soft. I mean, yeah, they're going to get four rounds to survive, but by the time you start getting down, your first round's going to be, I think it's what? Like one or two die your first round until it gets smacked down to like two or three hits. So, and they don't, you really can't crew them to survive. So, like, I could put crew to, like, my ship gets hit. I move my ship out a little bit, then the Borg cube shoots somebody closer, and then I get to get a round or two of repairs because I can put crew on it. Where the fighters, you don't get that option. Once they get hit, they're pretty much, you know, they lose that point and it don't come back.
One of the guys at my OP, one or two of the guys had a Hideki with two Cardassian ships, and I think he got third place.
I would have thought that.
I mean, with the Hideki, you get six attack instead of five. So you're going to get lose one per round, but if you're only playing six or seven rounds, I mean, your ship's not going to get destroyed. So it could, you theoretically last longer than another ship if you do your spacing right. If you put it on the outside edge, then it's going to not get attacked as much as the guys on the inside edge. And that's another thing is placing. I don't know how you place your guys, but...
Because I had the 180, I placed them on the edge because I had a larger area to hit them with. So I didn't go straight in at them. I sat out at an angle, and then I moved in at like three or four to get in range to shoot. And then once I was in range of shoot, I went slow, but I never turned towards. Because as soon as you turn towards, you're going to close distance, and then you'll become the primary target. That was the catch with anybody that was running a ship that had a 90-degree arc like standard Federation ships. They had to go straight at it, or else they never got a shot off. So that was an advantage for me not going straight at them.
Now, yeah, Dan, what determines who controls the Borg? I guess is my question. Who determines where the Borg moves and who he attacks?
The Borg does not move. Okay, the Borg cube sits where it's at. It shoots the nearest four targets. Okay, so the nearest four targets are automatically targets. It doesn't matter who the nearest four are. It shoots the nearest four. So that was the catch. If you shot if your forward arc was 90 degrees, you had to face and move towards it to shoot and hit with your dice. With the 180, you didn't have to worry about that. You could parallel it and never move toward and not have to move towards it. So you might be the first or second. You might get hit the first or second round your ships, but once the 90 degree arcs had to move in towards, they were usually by the third round they were the ones getting hit, and then you got to set outside. The disadvantage with the 180 arc is most of your ships with a 180 arc don't have as many dice, except for the Enterprise, because if I know I'm not going to get hit that round, I can drop shields and add attack dice to it, and that's one of the reasons I took the Enterprise. The Enterprise refit.
Yeah. And funny that you should mention that, but we're doing the Battle of the Starships on the Facebook page. And the USS Voyager completely annihilated the Enterprise D, hands down.
Wasn't even a contest. And that's the way they designed it. And they designed it a little askew. I agree with most of them that the Voyager was not supposed to be a combat ship. However, because of all the stuff it had to do, because it was stuck in the Gamma Quadrant. That was the other one. The quadrant they were stuck in, my brain just completely dumped on me.
Delta quadrant.
Because they were in a Delta quadrant, they had to do all these modifications for the ship to survive. Well, they took all those modifications and put it in the Decards. So initial construction, if you took a Voyager class against a standard Intrepid class versus a Galaxy class, it wouldn't even be close. But because they put all the cannon in there, that makes the Voyager way overpowered.
Yeah, and Voyager won hands down. Now, the second one, which we ran, was a Defiant against the Enterprise refit. And that one, the Defiant won by 2 votes.
Oh, you actually counted them out line by line?
I counted them out line by line. And nice. Let me see. Let me put – what did I have here? The Enterprise had 17 votes, and the Defiant had 19. That one was extremely close. I had to count them out because it was that close. I didn't have to count them out with the Enterprise and the Voyager. I only saw like 4 for Enterprise, and the other 30 were all for Voyager. So that one I didn't have to count. So I have no idea how badly Enterprise got buried. But Defiant and Enterprise, I had to count them. And that was a close battle right there.
Yeah, the cloak on the Defiant gives it a little bit of an edge. Where the Enterprise, I think, gets the edge that I think a lot of people miss is the crew capability. Because if you just go with the cards, that are issued with it, the Enterprise refit has substantial amount of crew interchangeability, where the Defiant, because it has such little crew number slots and doesn't have a bunch of crew to begin with the issue, if you didn't have the cloak in there and the quantum torpedoes, I'd say the refit would probably take it hands down. And to be honest, with the 180 shot, I almost want to say that I prefer the refit issue for issue. Now, and that's what we're comparing is the expansion issue with the cards that came with. If you look at all of it, plus you get an Admiral out of that expansion, I'm sorry. I would almost prefer the refit, even though the Defiant is a way better ship in my in my heart, the Defiant's number one ship in the freaking universe to me, because I was Navy and I like combat ships. I was on a combat ship. So you gave me Deep Space Nine with a combat ship. I'm sorry, I sleep underneath the Defiant on my bed. But issue for issue in Star Trek Attack Wing, I think the refit is probably better.
Well, you know, I think that the Defiant is as much as the Voyager is overvalued, I think the Defiant is undervalued.
Yep, most definitely.
The Defiant was built for one reason, a Borg killer. That's what Captain Sisko said. It had teeth, and it can bite. And
yeah, I think they under...
Now, if later on in an expansion they came out with a phased pulse cannon or something like that that could only be mounted on the Defiant and cost extra points to be used on any other ship that would beef up the Defiant, I would say absolutely. Defiant, all the way.
Here's something to think about. Here's something to think about. Real quick note. Remember, yes, there was a Deep Space Nine had a Defiant, but there was actually two Defiants. The first Defiant got destroyed. The second ship used wasn't the Defiant; it was the Sao Paulo, I believe, and they renamed it the Defiant. So my question is, technically, they could kind of come out and say, "Oh, by the way, here's the Defiant version 2." And then go, okay, now we're going to boost up some points, put a couple more Tinker Toys in there. Now here's your new Defiant. Now will WizKids do that? I don't know. But that window exists.
And I believe that the Defiant 2 did not have the cloaking device either because it was destroyed on the original Defiant, right?
Correct. After the original Defiant was destroyed, they never put a cloak back on it. I'm trying to remember because it's been a little while since I watched Deep Space Nine. I don't remember if they straight out came out and said, oh, we're not putting a cloak on it, or if it was just insinuated because they never used it again. I don't remember. Maybe it did get said. I have to look at the episodes again. But yeah,
I never saw the ship cloak again, so that's why I assumed it didn't have one. If anyone's listening and knows the answer to that question, post it on the Facebook page, join us in chat, or give us a call and let us know.
Yeah.
But I don't, to my knowledge, I don't think that the Defiant 2 had a cloak.
Well, another thing is, I think when they renamed the Sao Paulo to the Defiant, that was during the Dominion War, and the Romulans, we weren't enemies, but we weren't exactly friends, so I think they kind of used the situation to apply to the canon to say, the Romulans weren't our friends right now, so we're not going to issue another one because, you know, we don't want to piss off the Dominion, because I don't think the Romulans were in the war at the time when the Sao Paulo was renamed.
Now, if anyone wants to go to our Facebook page and vote on any of these ships, please, by all means, do. I can always change the numbers before we issue the final chart, so you can always go and vote for the Enterprise and give it those two extra votes, but these are all preliminary right now. Now, right now, we also have up the Equinox and the Reliant, which both ships are the same numbers, same points. There's nothing different except for the flavor text on each ship. And that one, I haven't checked. I don't know how close it is, who's winning or who's not, but that's one that you guys can go on the Facebook page and voice your opinion about right now.
If I was a betting man, I'd say Reliance in the lead. Equinox
is not a love ship. I think Reliant will take it simply because it's the Reliant.
Yeah. For some reason,
need you say more?
No. I mean, for some reason, the Equinox was never a love. I mean, first off, Voyager is not the most loved ship or show to begin with. Equinox was only shown on Voyager. So some people don't even know what it is, unless you go and watch the series. And second, even in the series, the Equinox was not a love ship because it was captained by a guy that Janeway basically said was a turncoat because of what he did to try to get his crew home.
He violated the Prime Directive.
Right.
So you guys don't go and
alone.
Vote on that. Hey, Matt, are you still with us?
Yep.
I wanted to ask you while I have you on the phone. It's great to talk to one of our loyal fans. It really makes me tingle all inside. What do you think about the NX-01? Did you see the cards that we had posted on that?
I think it's going to be a lot better ship than most people think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has no shields, but I still think it's going to surprise a lot of people.
Put a cloaking device on it. You don't need shields. Oh, wait, you can't if it doesn't have shields. Never mind.
Yeah, you have to disable shields to put a cloaking device on it, yeah.
But you could use the... couldn't you still use the Nimstrom cloak circuitry thing? I didn't buy the Nimstrom card, so I'm not sure what the prereqs are for that.
Neither did I. I'll pull it up right now. What chip was that on?
The Nimstrom Raider.
Okay.
It had a cloak. It wasn't called. It was called cloak circuitry card.
No, you can use it. It'll cost you 8-9 points, but instead of performing a normal action, you may disable the card to perform the cloak action, place an aux token beside your ship. While you have a cloak token, you can do the sensor echo. So, yep, 5 squadron points on a non-Kazon ship, so you can certainly use it.
So there you go. You could cloak the Enterprise 01.
Yeah, but you would never be able to get to use that in most competitions. But at home, it'd be awesome.
And, one ship that I'm really looking forward to, which I hope they don't drop the ball on this one, is the Enterprise E.
Oh, it better have 5 dice. If it doesn't have 5 dice, I'm going to call WizKids and call them bad names.
Because when the Sovereign class came into First Contact and took on the Borg ship, I mean, this ship better be able to fight. This ship better be the Federation ship. It better be. It better have some awesome upgrades. It better have some awesome crew cards. And it better have a lot more teeth than the Defiant. Or the Voyager, for that matter.
And it better have some Borg, anti-Borg cards to it. Because, again, that was... Not only was the Defiant built for that, so was... the Sovereign, because I just got my Eagle Moss issue of it, and Eagle Moss, for those of you who don't have Eagle Moss, comes with a 12 to 14 page booklet for each ship it issues, and it actually has 3 to 4 pages inside there what was in the thoughts of the designers, when they were designing the ship to put on TV, and it specifically says right in there that they had every intention of this thing was built as an anti-Borg ship, so it had built-in rotating harmonic shields. It had built-in quantum torpedoes, specific quantum torpedo launchers versus and standard torpedo launchers. And it had something else in there. There's 3 things it said it had on there that was anti-Borg, and I don't remember what the 3rd thing was. So hopefully somebody over there that are designing these things are looking these things up. I mean, yeah, they're... I hope so. God, I hope so. And not just going, okay, that looked cool on TV show. Let's put it on.
And, there was something else that I was thinking about earlier that I wanted to bring up. Back in the day, we used to play Starfleet Battles, and it would take hours and hours to play. You had pencils, and you had a piece of graph paper, and each one of the shields was on, and you had to mark everything off with a pencil. They had it was like Dungeons and Dragons for Star Trek. I mean, when you fired your phasers, you had to count the hex grids, and then you had to look on a chart to see what the range of that weapon was, and subtract damage for range. And it was a very complicated game, but we played it nonetheless. And then FASA came out with a more simplified version, which we also played. And both of those games, you can still find kicking around today. If you go online, you can still find people that are making up Starfleet Battle ships to play. However, Attack Wing, I think, has a much, much longer shelf life than those games simply because of the simplicity that's involved in playing this game. You don't have to be a Star Trek fan. You don't have to be a fanboy. You don't have to be a geek. You don't have to have 15 different types of dice and 5 different books. All you need to do is have a friend and some fun and sit down and play it. It's relatively easy to learn and fun to play. And when all is said and done, when all the smoke settles, I think that when all the game fanboys move on from this game to the next new hot game, that whatever that game may be, and they move away from this game, I think this game is going to have all the Star Trek fans that play this game because they love Star Trek are going to be left with this game, and I think that's when this game is going to take on a life of its own.
The only thing that concerns me is I don't know what rights WizKids got, because ultimately there is a certain amount of ships you can issue, and, you know, because of it, depending on who they bought their rights from, and this is what, and this is, again, hate to bring it up, but Eagle Moss is running into. They're looking at, well, yeah, we have rights to this, but they're talking about, like, Titan, you know, getting into the USS Titan, which is not canon, so I don't know if they have the rights to it. Shelf life is, you know, and I'll use this. I was at the game shop, and they're talking about Magic. They're saying that Magic, you know, is going to a different release system where they're cutting down their release down to 18 months versus 24. There's a release cycle because they're finding out that they're losing business because people are getting bored at about the 14 to 15 month mark of the cards. And then for the next 9 months, Wizards of the Coast isn't making as much money. So they're changing that. And this is where we go back to now look at, let's use that parallel here. Once they get to a certain amount where they're, you know, okay, we got the Equinox. Okay, well, we got another ship with 20 points that has something, you know, okay, well, why do I have the Equinox? Why do I want to buy another ship with 20 points? You know, they're going to have to ultimately look at the long-term future to keep this game on the shelf, producing new things. That, you know, they're going to have to come up with new stuff. They can't just rely on TV canon, because sooner or later they're going to run out of it.
Well, there's a lot of it there, though.
Well, yeah,
it's
but
matter,
I mean, look at Magic,
you know,
20 years and something. You know, can you really get 20 years of ships out of what's currently out there? If you're releasing every month, like they are right now?
Not unless they start doing other versions of the same ships, which
they're already doing that now, the ISS and stuff.
You know, they've got but they have the Beamoth and the Kronos 1. They're both Katinga-class cruisers.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done that once so far. There's the four Constellation class ships that we saw on the original Star Trek, the
right.
Lexington, the Constellation, the Hornet, and the Enterprise, which we already have. There's still some stuff they could do, but whether or not they'll do that is another question.
Right.
But I guess my question, you still with us, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Matt, do you play the game with friends just for fun, or do you just go to OP events?
I go to OP events. One of my friends may be getting into the game, so I'm looking forward to that. But mostly I play the game with my wife, mostly. But OP events, just those two typically, because it's not really big with my circle of friends right now. So.
Well, I played in one OP event. I won the Ferengi Kraxen, and I won the Chitang. I only played in one event. I was not really thrilled with playing in the event because, to me, it wasn't as fun as playing it at home because it was too cutthroat. And again, this we're talking OP event 1 and OP event 2. So this we're talking the first ones that came out. And I didn't have as much fun as playing at home with some friends. I thought it was much more enjoyable for me when I was just sitting down and playing with some friends for fun than it was at a cutthroat OP event. And that's just my opinion.
You know what's interesting is between OP1 and OP2, a lot of almost identical group of guys. And I find OP2, you know, you slowly do build the friendship or at least the camaraderie with the person. So having done two in a row, I know the next time the OP3 is going to be, you know, it's competitive, don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, there's competitive, but if you've got a good group of people, I mean, it's not going to replace your friends, but if you've got a good group of good sportsmen-like people, that makes a whole difference.
That does, because that's what it's all about when you come right down to it. Dan, how was it at the OP event that you played in? Was it just a cutthroat thing, or were people having a good time and playing the game?
Well, I played in two different locations. I mean, one was in Milwaukee, because I live in Wisconsin, so it was Milwaukee. Another one's in Janesville, which is it's a small town almost on the Illinois-Wisconsin border, west of where I am. In the Milwaukee one, I won't say what game store it is, because you know, I don't want them to lose business or anything, or nobody, but it was a large group. It was like 22 or 23 people, which for right now, that's a lot of people for a Star Trek Attack Wing grouping. But it was not a good environment. I was not a fan of the environment. It was, people weren't there to enjoy the game and compete. It was kill, 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 kill as fast as you can. Move on to the next person. You couldn't talk to the person because it was so loud. The room we were playing in with 22 people is smaller than my basement, and I don't live in a big house. Okay, and it was loud. The person running the place was yelling at the people, and being in the military, I'm not a fan of some arbitrary person trying to walk up and yell at me. I'm not a fan of that, because when you yell at me, it makes me want to yell back, and I'm pretty good at it. I was trained to be a good yeller, and it's just not an environment I want to deal with. Janesville, the other place, it was only a group of eight people, and it was quiet, not like we were all in church, but it was, I could talk to the person, I got to know the person. I'm already Facebook friends with a few of them. You know, and we communicate even right now. And even though there was less prizes at Janesville, because not as much money is going into it, only one or two people go home with something, versus the Milwaukee one where there was like seven Tamirs given away in that group of 22 people. But I would rather go play and compete with people that I can talk to and be like, you know, Hey, you missed that move there. Oh, thanks, man, I appreciate it. And they're willing to compete against you and your build, not just compete against whether you pay attention or not. I wasn't a big fan of that. So, yeah, there's definitely two different groups of people out there, of course. There's always is. And I am not ones where it's, you know, cutthroat, cutthroat, cutthroat. Oh, you missed something that you didn't, you know, oh, you missed that thing. You didn't say it 2 seconds ago, so you're out of it. And you're just like, you know what, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to pay for the gas. I don't want to submit the money. I'll go to Janesville and have a decent time, you know.
And that's why I think this game is going to be around for a while, because Star Trek fans are going to embrace this game, because you can play this game in the spirit of Star Trek. You can sit down with your friends and come up with a mission that's time-specific. You can say, we're only going to use Star Trek Enterprise-era ships, or Next Generation, or, you know, movie era. And, you know, because on the Facebook page, you hear a lot of people complaining about the Borg and how powerful they are. But if you just step back for a second and realize that the Borg, the Reliant's not going to stand a chance against the Borg, and it shouldn't. Same thing with the original Enterprise or, you know, a Klingon D7, because those ships are, you know, a century and a half behind the technology of the Borg, so they shouldn't. Because,
if you're playing at home,
if you're playing at home, then, you know, you can play the game any way you want.
Yeah, we don't play the Borg in my house. I have the Sphere and I have the Cube. And the Sphere's in my travel box, and the Cube's sitting up on the shelf next to my Eagle Moss models, because we're just like, you know, I'm not going to play the Borg every time that I play Star Trek Attack Wing, because, I mean, ultimately, if you count the times the Borg were on all of Star Trek, you could probably count it down to, what, 10? Well, no, because if you put Voyager in there, Mm-hmm. Every third episode at the last three seasons was Borg, so, yeah, no, I can't say that. But Borg weren't in every episode. They don't have to be in every competition. Yeah, my house, in it, on top of the move, the way it moves and stuff like that, you're like, it completely is obscure compared to the rest of the ships. So I'm just like, you know what, instead of trying to fight with how we're going to play the Borg, let's just play with something else. I got every other race out there. Let's knock ourselves out.
Now, I did buy the Borg Sphere only because I wanted 7 of 9. But the only other Borg ship that I'm looking at buying is the Soon-type ship.
Yeah, I have that one.
Yep.
Because
it's
independent, and it's very Trek-orientated. The way they made the ship is very reminiscent of the way it would be used on the show. So, you know, it's not strictly Borg. So that's the only one. Now, if they put Locutus on one of the Borg ships, I'll have to buy that to get Locutus because I want to have all the named cards of the bigger characters, because if I want to design a game at home, you want to be able to have those characters to put on your ship. That's the only reason why I would buy it.
Then you better start saving some money.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I'm going to say the large cube is going to have Locutus on it. That's why it wasn't released with any of the other ones.
Now, Matthew, did you hear earlier that we're going to have a Chitang raffle?
Yes, I heard about that. I may be interested.
And the Chitang is an excellent ship.
Yes,
we're going
to
have a non-U.S. raffle for the Chitang, and we're going to have a lighted Borg cube raffle for our U.S. fans. And we may get another Borg lighted cube that we'll do later for everybody, but we did promise the non-U.S. fans, because they're so loyal to us, that we would have something special for you guys. And that's what Dan and I came up with, was a Chitang. So, and I know you mentioned that you play Klingons, and the Chitang is a really good ship.
Well, I mean, the cards are nice too, and the fact that you can't find the Birds of Prey that often, at least up here, you can't.
Yeah, which brings me to something I'm going to have to tell everybody. Come to find out, okay, me and Jim were thinking about stocking our shelves with just about every OP ship we can get, and then do pretty regular grab bag raffles. So I just got informed today, and I'm new to this whole WizKid thing because I haven't done WizKid before. Come to find out that WizKid prints it for about 45 to 60 days and stocks a bunch, and once that stock runs out, they don't print them anymore. So as of locally my area, there are no Chitangs in storage in my area, which is a 3-state area. So the Chitangs we have may be some of the last Chitangs available short of eBay. And
yes,
that goes for all of
that
people.
Is unfortunate for everybody. When we run out of the stock that we have, we're going to have to shift. We're talking about blind boosters right now.
Yeah, and which reminds me, I did call. I did call. He looking into it. He thinks we're pretty good.
So we may have blind boosters. Matthew got a Gorn ship, so for calling in tonight. And we don't know. We're going to be doing the Stargazer. And then beyond that, we don't know, because they haven't announced what the new ships will be. So when we run out of stock that we have,
we'll try
I don't know
to restock
what we'll do after
we
that.
We're
going to
restock what we can.
Yep, we're going to try to make sure we have stuff for you guys.
The Sutherland and the Chitang are probably not going to happen. I might have a lead on another Sutherland, but I'm not going to promise that. And we need to find out from our winner which ship he wants. Have you seen that? I haven't looked at the page.
No, I have the Blog Talk Radio page up for the chat room. I'll have to check it right after the show ends. We're going to continue to bring you guys the best that we can get for you guys, but
yep.
So don't worry about that.
Yep, we'll have something, and it'll be most likely not retail. If it is retail, it's going to be something retail awesome, not not something we might toss a couple E's in here somewhere.
So you're not going to put out a Rizvo?
We were thinking about a Enterprise E, maybe the Defiant,
some of the good
maybe
ones.
The Bird of Prey, some of the ones that people are looking for. And I'll tell you, and if you want to communicate with us, anyone that's, if you're too shy to call us or too busy, or you're listening to this broadcast as a download later through the archives, don't be afraid to message Dan or myself on the Facebook page, or share your thoughts on the Facebook page about what you're interested in, if you're looking for a ship, what you think, because we do read those and we do listen to you.
Oh yeah,
and
I read everyone that comes in.
We read them all. So if enough people say, you know, there's no Defiance in my area, I would be interested in the Defiant. Okay, it's not an OP ship, but we will track down a Defiant and we will have one. And then you call us on the show like Matt just did, and you just want a Defiant. So that's our way of saying thank you to you guys for making this show possible.
Yep.
So go on the Facebook page and share your thoughts with us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you want to see, and we will make every effort to make that happen for you. That's a promise.
Yep. A couple things we want to talk or I want to state before, because we only have about 15 minutes left.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. We talked about we're looking at we got a bead on some possible advertisers, and so what we want to say is for those of you who are listening on download, okay, if you are if you know local businesses, because I promise you when we starts getting put out that we're giving away OPs and OPs and blind boosters and stuff, our listening is going to go up, especially when we talk about when it gets out that we're putting out live, that we're giving away live. Our numbers are going to go up. So if you know somebody that would want Star Trek related, okay, Star Trek related, Star Trek or Star Trek Attack Wing related, if you want to advertise or a friend of yours wants to advertise, send us a message. It's not a bunch of money. It's just to say, hey, this is what we're doing. Come talk to these local people if you're in their area, you know, maybe looking to help you. Hopefully we'll start seeing international and large national distribution of this so in the future. Fingers crossed. You know, it'll help out. Because I know the one we're going with is Great Britain, right? UK's, well, somebody in the UK wants to help them out, right?
Yeah, that we have a store in the UK that wants to advertise with us on this show, which is awesome. And when Ken and I were doing the Masters of Disaster, when Attack Wing first came out, I had shops that were sending me stuff for free in exchange for advertising time. For those of you that remember, we even had a couple of shops that owners that called the show to share with us new ships and new things and talk about OP events. And that kind of went away as time went on. As the game became more popular, I guess they felt they didn't need that extra boost or whatever, and that stopped. So it has happened in the past, and it can happen again. You know, if you're a shop owner and you're listening to this either live or on archives, by all means, you know, you can give us a call and talk to us. Tell us about your shop and where you're located and the OP events that you're running and whatnot. We're not afraid to do that.
No.
We want to get as much information out to the fans as we can. And I might not live in Oshkosh, but there might be someone listening who does. As I said, this show has really good international numbers, and that's why we're on this time slot, because of our UK listeners and our people across the pond, so that they can tune in at a decent hour if they choose to. And we're going to continue to do that. So
yeah,
this is your show and your Facebook page.
Right. And we're doing this to keep Star Trek Attack Wing specifically and Star Trek relevant. I mean, like we stated, there's no TV show on right now. The movies make money, but if the movies are out, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't pay attention to it. The people we hopefully have here are Star Trek fans. You know, and we're trying to get this stuff out, you know, Star Trek Attack Wing parts, try to help you guys get things you can't. A lot of our listeners, like we have a couple of listeners in Australia, they straight up say, we live in the middle of nowhere, we can't get this stuff. We have actually gone out as far as we've shipped stuff to them. Now, OPs we ship to them at our cost, okay, because a couple OP, one of the Australian dudes won a OP, right?
Yes, Sutherland.
Right. Now, if you need other stuff, we may charge you for shipping, but we'll still get you the stuff out there because this is, you know, if you got five or six friends that want to play and you want extra ships, give us a message. I have, when it comes to retail, I have a very good resource for retail, and he has no problem ordering the extra retail stuff. So anybody that's listening, if you live in a remote area and you're willing to pay for the shipping, okay, I will get you anything you want. That's my promise to you.
And something else I want to mention before can't believe I'm saying run out of time. We burned through 2 hours. But I like to keep the page alive, and I like to have a lot of different posts on the page. And a lot of times there's not a lot of Attack Wing news to put out there. So I'm trying to keep Star Trek alive as well as Star Trek Attack Wing. That's why I have the Star Trek Triple Play now, where I'll just pull three random pictures from random Star Treks, whether it's movies, the animated series, whatever, and I throw them up there just to keep the flavor, because at the end of the day, we're all Star Trek fans. So I want to keep the page fresh, I want to keep it new, and I want to keep you guys interested and talking with each other about whatever the post may be. I will say this, though. I do not allow people to attack other fans or make derogatory posts against other fans. That's one thing I don't stand for. I've only had to ban one person and warn another. Now, if somebody posts something on there about Into Darkness and they thought it was the greatest movie in the world and they loved it and you hated it, and you want to have a discussion with this person, that's fine. But if you want to go on the Facebook page and post derogatory, negative attack against this person, I won't tolerate that. That's the only thing that I ask, is that we act like adults and we don't attack people because they don't agree with us. If you want to have a discussion and say, yeah, well, I think that this, for this reason, that's fine. But don't attack people. It takes the fun out of everything. I don't want to have to be, you know, like a school teacher and, you know, say, okay, Matthew, now don't do that anymore. And I'm not picking on you, Matthew, but I don't like doing that. It takes the fun out of it. So don't put me in a situation where I have to do that. That's all I ask. I'm going to step down off my soapbox now. And Matthew, well, what do you think about the Facebook page so far and what we're doing with it and the direction that Dan and I are taking with it and the new show since Ken has stepped down?
Well, I mean, definitely I like the content, and it's got a little bit for everyone, and I appreciate the comments about, you know, keeping the page adult and civil is the situation that, you know, I came across. I appreciated that. I'm not sure if you remember that, but you know, I was in that situation. But, you know, I appreciate the work that you guys did before, because that's where we got us where we're at now. But I like it's not just one, you know, one focus, like, you know, different types of Trek and different series and everything. And I like the direction it's going.
And you know, one of the main things behind Star Trek is infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And Star Trek's been around for such a long time that Dan and I really don't have any problems finding all kinds of different things for you guys. And you might not be into cosplay, so maybe you don't like the pictures that I find of all the different Star Trek people that dress up as Gorns and Borg and Klingons. I enjoy that. So I will, when I find some decent pictures, I'll put them on the Facebook page for you guys and share them with you. Or a video unboxing of a new ship, or even an old ship. And that's something else that people seem to forget. You may have been around the game since it came out, but we're growing at approximately 100 fans a week. Would you say that's about right, Dan?
Yeah, and that's with losses.
That's including people that are leaving. We're still gaining about 100 people a week. These are all new fans that are just stepping into this thing that don't know that there's a Defiant out there, or don't know about the Chitang or whatnot, and they're coming into this new and fresh. We want to welcome those people with open arms and make them feel like part of the family. So if you see a post of a ship that's already been there, like the Katinga class or the Defiant or the Reliant or something like that, you don't need to send me a message that you already saw that or why are you putting that up there again or whatnot, because I'm trying to make the new fans aware of what's out there, because they may have missed that particular ship or don't even know it exists. So we want to keep them interested.
At the rate we post things, you know, you figure something that we posted last month is so far down that nobody's really going to go down that far. So, yeah, sometimes our stuff will repeat. And I try not to do anything more than once every 2 weeks. Like, I really want to repost the sign-up for getting the Titan on Eagle Moss. But I just did it, like, 4 days ago. So, and even though it's way down the page, I'm still going to try to wait a little longer because I really want that in there. And 2,500 people, get some strength.
Yeah, and that's something else. If you people are listening in the archives and you're new to this, you can go to the top of the page where it says photos. You can click on the photo link, and then you can click on albums. And I put all the cards in albums so that you can go back and see what cards came with the Reliant or with the Ferengi ship or whatever. You can also go in there. I have blueprints of the Vorcha. I have blueprints of the Enterprise E. I have all kinds of fun stuff in there. You guys can just go in there and poke around. You can also click on the videos link and scroll through all the different videos that we've had posted throughout the life of this page. So you guys, there's a lot of resources there that you guys can check out. And just, you know, have some fun with it and look around the page. I'm sure you'll find something there that you weren't aware of. So, and if you're looking for something and you can't find it, let me and Dan know, and we will find it for you.
I'm pretty resourceful.
So, you know, we will track it down. So I'm pretty happy with our first show. Let's see, we're down to 8 minutes. I'm very pleased with the way the show went tonight. What do you think, Dan?
Yep. I like to call it, this is going to be called the bonus show. We didn't plan on doing the two-hour one until next week. We have a loose framing laid out that we're going to try to start sticking to. So we have, when listeners listen, if they're not, say, interact, because we're going to do a lot of sci-fi and we're going to do Star Trek and we're going to do all this other stuff. So somebody that may not be a Star Trek Attack Wing player can know, you know, roll forward 35 or 40 minutes and get into your section. We're going to try to keep that loose framing. But for our first two-hour show, we kind of winged it, seeing that we just figured out we're going to do this, what, yesterday?
Yep, yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday. We did okay. I think we did pretty decent. We had a good addition, Matthew.
And I think Matt being here really makes it worthwhile. So thank you for joining us, Matt.
Oh, glad to be here.
And Karma Chameleon in the chat room as well. Usually
make sure
Delta
you tell
Angel
all your friends.
Us, but he could obviously didn't make it this week. But we may talk to Delta and see if he wants to come on the show and talk with us about Attack Wing. He does State of the Federation, which I will post on our Facebook page when he puts out a new video as well. So,
he's in chat.
There's a lot out there. There's a
was
lot out there
chat?
For you guys.
Yeah, Delta's
and if you
in
have
chat.
Any suggestions, just, you know, send Dan or I a message on Facebook, and we oh, there's Delta. Delta's here.
Oh, way to go.
Yes, Delta is here now. We have 4 minutes left, and Delta arrived. Better late than never. I was going to say that we were going to see if he wanted to come on the show and talk with Dan and I about Attack Wing. He does a great job with State of the Federation, so maybe we can talk him into coming on our show and doing a segment with us. We'll get in touch with him and see how he thinks about that. But congratulations. goes out to Robert Bruce, the winner of our grab bag raffle. Make sure you shoot me your name and address and let me know what OP kit you're interested in so we can get that out to you. And congratulations to Matthew Dobson. He won the Gorn OP kit just for calling in and being a Star Trek fan. Congratulations, Matt.
Thank you.
And, I got bad news for you, though.
What?
He can't win for another 3 weeks now.
Uh-oh. But that doesn't stop him from joining us, though.
No, you can come join us, but to keep fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. And we're also going to be giving away OP participation prizes, too, not only ships. So if you're looking for the fleet captain's card or the officer's cards or whatever, once I can get everything organized here, who knows, Dan and I might be talking about something and I might just say, hey, the next caller gets a set of fleet cards. Just like that. That's simple. And then you call and you win. It's that simple. I mean, we want to get the stuff out to you guys. We want you guys to have what you need to play the game.
Yeah, so, I don't need 10 copies sitting on my shelf.
Right. I want to get them out to you. But I want something back from you, and what I want from you is I want to see these numbers on the show staying steady and increasing, and the way I do that is bribing you, and I have no qualms with saying that. I'm bribing you. I want you to listen to the show, and as a reward for listening to the show, I'm going to give you a ship. I'm going to give you some fleet cards. I'm going to give you admirals. Whatever it is that we can get our hands on, I'm going to give it to you just for listening to the show. Yeah, I'm like a Ferengi. I'm a Ferengi trader. So, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to give you guys stuff. So, that's our first show. what a blast. It was great talking with you, Dan.
Yep, I enjoyed it. And looking forward to next week.
It was great talking with Matt as well. Surprised to be talking with Matt. Congratulations on winning your Gorn Raider OP kit.
Thanks.
And I can't think of anything else to talk about for the last 2 minutes, unless you want to take us home, Dan. You have anything you want to close out with?
Please, you know, tell your friends that play Star Trek Attack Wing, when you go to your events, tell them you listen to us. Tell them about the page. You'd be surprised how many people don't know about the page. Several of my local associates now are part of the page. Help us distribute this, because ultimately, the more people listen, the more we can advertise. The more we can advertise, the less we have to charge, or not charge, but less raffles we have to do to get your OP events. And we're just looking to get you the maximum amount of stuff you can get at the minimum cost. Like we said, we don't take any money off this. All of it gets reinvested, and we distribute the stuff out to you guys. So the more listeners we have, the more people are in the page, the better shape we're in.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to say in closing, is that we have to pay for the show, and we have to pay for the postage, and we have to pay for the kits, and I have to pay to keep the Facebook page boosted so we can keep growing, and all that costs money, and we rely on the raffles to get that money. So that's what we do with the raffle money, and that's why we do the raffles, but also that's why we just gave Matthew a free Gorn Raider just for calling in, just as our way of saying thank you. And the nice Blog Talk Radio lady is telling me that our time is up, Matt and Dan, so we have to say good night. We will be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. I want to say thank you to Delta Angel for joining us in the chat room, late, but better late than never, and Karma Chameleon and Matthew and Dan, and join us on the Facebook page, and have a great night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Night, guys.
Night.
My name is McCoy. I'm a doctor.
What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle conductor?
I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself. I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
You're a healer. There's a patient. That's an order.
I'm a surgeon, not a psychiatrist.
Look. I'm a doctor, not an escalator. Spock, give me a hand.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic. I'm a doctor, not an engineer.
No, you're an engineer.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
You keep saying that. Are you a doctor, or aren't you?
I don't know.